Link Tech Show. The Linux Link Tech Show is on. Your link to the latest in GNU Linux and technology. An hour of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open source, open mics. Live from the Linux Link Tech Show studio, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away. Take it away.
That wasn't a good idea. I didn't adjust the audio settings for the intro, so it's really loud. Or was really loud. But that's okay. It didn't hurt your guys' ears, right?
Didn't hear a thing.
No, we didn't.
There we go. That's all that matters.
Sorry.
Sorry about that. It's show 124.
Woohoo. Woo.
A lot of fun stuff this week.
We're all remote.
And as you can tell, that crackling noise is because of Alan's audio. Yeah,
no, we're
superior Apple product.
Crackling noise, though. No. I'm not going to put up with that because I don't hear any crackling over here.
That's
except
because
when
we all hear. But we all hear it, and when you drop off, it's gone.
Yep. But yeah, when I listen, I cranked up the stream before, and I don't hear any crackling on the stream. So where's the crackling? Is it just in our headphones, or is it what's going out on the stream? Because I don't hear it on the stream.
I have no idea. I'm not listening to the stream, but I can sure hear it.
Yeah, me either. Well, I was before, because I was trying to, you know, when everybody's saying, you know, all this you know, static. I hear us clipping every now and then, but I think that's going to happen, because if we all start talking at the same time, we're going to, like, you know, we're going to clip like crazy. But I don't hear the cracking, you know, you don't hear static or anything like that.
Someone on the stream, Judas, says he hears the crackety crackling.
Yeah, I hear crackling. Oh, I heard it just now when you're talking. But that's because that's bandwidth we're hitting again. I think all four of us nailing this thing at one time. I think we're really, and pushing a stream out at the same time. I think that's like tapping in bandwidth. I think we're right.
Listen,
at the
man,
edge.
No excuses. Excuses are like assholes. Yeah. Everybody has one.
Yeah, no.
Did you say excuses are like apples? Right. Well, everybody has one? Or everybody wants one?
Assholes.
Pat wants an apple.
No, thanks.
Link wants an apple.
Well,
don't
so
know. I would if they weren't such bastards. You know that? I should probably ask that while we're on the air, right? Everybody in while we're on the show so we can get listener feedback through the mail, right? The situation is this. I have my tax refund back, and I've been wanting a Mac Mini for the longest time, and now I can afford to get one. However, I don't know if I really want to get one because, number one, like, they're changing the architecture over, and number two, Apple has made itself a bad habit of being a pack of assholes lately with all their, you know, all the stuff that they're pulling. So, I'm not sure what to do, you know. I really don't actually need to have another computer. This would have been something that, you know, I could have to play with and play with OS X on and stuff like that. However, you know, I just don't know what to do anymore. I don't know whether if I should get one, if I should just wait a few days, because I think what's going to happen is on the 28th they're going to announce their whole product line is being available or soon being available, their new Intel product line, because apparently you can't get a lot of the regular Apple products now at any of the Apple stores. Like, what is it, the 12 or 15 inch PowerBooks, can't get them anymore at any of the Apple stores, are not available. Everybody has run out. Most of the Mac Minis have run out now, the PPC Mac Minis. So, I'm thinking that, you know, and they had this big announcement coming up on the 28th, I'm thinking probably what they're going to do is say that, you know, all their new Intel architecture stuff is going to be ready then or shortly thereafter. So, you know, I'm just looking for feedback as to what really to do.
like, if you want OS 10, you can download off of BitTorrent and install it on your new AMD system.
Yeah, I know that too, but here's the thing. Like, I really want to be legal with my software. I have not had a reason to do anything illegally other than, you know, watch DVDs on my system. And that's still up for grabs, whether that's legal or not. I haven't had to do anything illegal with software, you know, since I quit running Windows some, what, 8-10 years ago. You know, you don't, with Linux, there's no need for you to pirate software and stuff like that because it's free. You know, you can find a free use software to do damn near anything you want. And I'd rather not have to step back into that sort of situation where I feel obligated to do not legal things or shady things with my software.
Shady thickets.
Because I feel that, yeah, because I feel that, like most Windows users, you know, you feel you're getting ripped off. You pay all this money for stuff that doesn't work, and then they want you to pay for upgrades in order to fix the broken shit that you paid money for and stuff like that.
Like, what exactly do you want to do? I mean, you just want to play with OS 10?
I just want to, like, play with it and check it out and have some, I guess, point of reference as to what. Because I've played with it a little bit here and there, but never for an extended period of time. You know what I mean?
Well, let me ask you a question about this. What do you want to do with this system?
You're kidding, right? This is like the third time I told you.
I don't know. I stepped out. I stepped out of the room when you were saying that. I had to go do something. What is it exactly you want to do with the system again?
I want to have something that I can play with OS 10.
OS 10. And
not only that, but you know what? There are a few applications on OS 10 that I would like to have access to that Linux is lacking in. Right at the moment, too, like the video editing stuff.
What's wrong with Kino? Hearsay.
Kino is awesome if you have if you're doing DVI video imports. I, however, don't do that. Like, the video I want to manipulate is stuff off of, you know, it's like stuff off of AVI files or stuff off of my analog camcorder that I
pull over
into an AVI file or something like that.
Pull it in. Run it through Lives, convert it to digital video, pull it into Kino. Case closed.
You can even borrow my camera. My camera has video through. So what you do is if you have like an analog video camera, you run it through the video through on the digital camcorder. You record it onto the mini DV tape, and then you import with that through the FireWire.
But see, that just is a pain in. And plus, I don't have FireWire on my. I don't think I have FireWire on this computer.
Well, you know what?
No, no FireWire.
I think you're still going to
have a spare card if you want one.
You're still going to have a problem with getting the analog video in there, regardless of whether you're running a Mac or running OS 10 or Linux. You're going to need some kind of capture card that'll pull in analog video to run on that Mac. And I know there's a couple of them that are USB, and there may be some FireWire ones, but that's going to cost you, you know, a little bit more money. So you're still not going
to
be able to.
No, but I don't need to pull an analog video on the Mac. I can pull an analog video on my Linux box really easy.
Right.
What I can't do is do video editing on my Xbox really easy. Because, you know, Kino and all of those, they're set up to do DVI, and I don't have that.
Right. Well, what you
and I mean, I spent some quality time trying to get that damn thing to work with Kino before, and I'm just so damn frustrated with it. I'm sure for you guys it's a whole different experience because you just had a DVI device. You just, you know, sucked your video right in. But I was trying to get stuff to work that wasn't natively DVI, and that was really a pain in the ass.
Well, I told you, man, just get Lives. Lives will chuck it
out
and re-encode it into digital video. You can pull it into anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, oh, you can even edit it in Lives. But no, I understand what you're talking about. And before you start going down that route, you might want to throw some AVIs or whatever, you know, file you have together format, and, you know, let's chuck it on mine and see if it imports really easily. Because I know sometimes you got codec issues with, you know, QuickTime, and it might even be with iMovie, too, because I think it uses the same codec engine just to make sure.
Well, sure.
I had to do some wacky stuff to get this past weekend. You know, case in point, we have QuickTime streaming servers at work, and they use QuickTime mm-hmm. Broadcaster, and a teacher came in with this band video that's being, the band's coming in to play at the one school, and they wanted to put the video on the morning announcements, which is streamed through QuickTime streaming server.
Right.
And it was a WMV. Broadcaster won't play a WMV. And the guy, we only had a couple days to get this thing converted. Like, it was like Thursday it was given to us, and it had to be ready by Tuesday, and we were off Friday and Monday. So, you know, I brought it to my place. Yeah, go figure. I brought it to my house, and, you know, one of the suggestions was to take it, put it in, pull it into VLC, and VLC will do transcoding for you. But it was a Windows Media version 3, and VLC would not read the video feed on OS 10. And I had a problem reading the video feed on my Linux box, so I pulled it into Lives, and then I exported it out into MPEG 4, which I thought, it's MPEG 4. OS 10 should be able to read it. QuickTime could not read it. So I exported out into AVI. I tried a couple different formats. Finally, I took the MPEG 4. It was readable by VLC on OS 10. So I did that, and I exported it out to another, I forget, QuickTime, I think, format through VLC on OS 10, and it was perfect then after that. But it is. It's a pain in the ass with this. This whole codec thing's a mess.
What makes it worse is that a lot of these formats, like AVI and stuff, they're just wrappers for the, you know, it's just a wrapper
right.
for the actual codec underneath that they're using. And, you know, it's hard to find out what that is and how to pull the information from that and to what you actually need. Like you said in your blog post, I remember reading your blog post, what you said in there is everybody should just use OGG and be done with it, right? Use the Aura.
That's it.
And, hell yeah, I agree with you 100% there, you know.
Yeah, but it is just a mess. But my suggestion
with you... Well, that would only work in a perfect world.
Yeah. And then my suggestion with you is getting a Mac. You're looking to get a Mac Mini, right?
Right.
And, you know, with the Mac Mini, I'm sure it's a decent system. It's just as good, if not better, than anything else you're going to buy. I would wait until the Mac Mini goes Intel. And I'm not sure. I don't think it's Intel yet. That way,
no, not yet.
Yeah, that way you're not going to run into some of the limitations on the PPC architecture, Linux on the PPC architecture. So you know, I would.
Yeah, when I start running Linux on it, right?
when you start letting it, you know, you might get sick of OS 10 after a few weeks of using it, or you want to repartition and run Linux, but. I would wait until the Intel one comes out. And you know what? Honestly, I have no idea when that is. The PowerBooks, I think, are released for the Intel now. The iMac.
Well, like
is
I
first.
Said, you're having problems at the Apple stores getting a hold of anything, any new hardware right now. They're all running out. Everything's out of stock. And the Apple has this big announcement that they're telling everybody about that they're going to do on February 28th, which is only, you know, a week away. And my money says that that's what they're going to announce, that they're going to change their product line on February 28th, the Intel. And, you know, when they do that, they don't do that and say, well, we're going to change it and it'll be ready in a week. They launch it out and it's ready like that day, usually. So, I'm betting we're going to see something like that. I also have good word that I think that the Intel-based Mac Mini is going to be cheaper.
Aren't they notoriously underpowered? I know Alan spent more money to get a one with more memory and CPU, right, Alan?
Well,
no,
I just sprung
for the top of the line one. That's all.
Right.
How much was it?
I paid like $800 for mine.
That's a lot, man.
The bottom of the line one was a little bit underpowered, and it didn't have enough memory. It started out with 256 megs of RAM. The one that
last year they all went to 512.
Right, they all went to 512. They upgraded everything, right?
Yeah. And I can't say that I've had any problem with the 512 in here.
Yeah, because everybody complained about 256, and they figured the 512 was a lot better.
Everybody was complaining about that. No, but I wanted the DVD burner and the larger hard drive, so that's why it cost me more.
Mm-hmm.
But that was just, you know, I figured I'm buying it, I might as well buy it right then. It's stuff I was going to want anyway, put in one package. Plus, it's got, you know, it's got the wireless built in, it's got Bluetooth built in.
Right.
You know, I clicked all the options when I bought it.
Well,
but no, the normal one is like $4.99. I think $4.99 is what it was.
Yep. The only one that I can find now to buy is the one for $5.99, and that's the one with that's the upgraded processor. Was it 1.4 something gigahertz?
Yeah, 4.7 or something like that.
Right, 1.47. It's got, I don't know, 40 or 60 gig hard drive, and it's got the Bluetooth included and the AirPort included, and
okay, so that's,
you know,
the same
512
one
megs of RAM, $5.99.
This is what you do: you take that money you're getting from the income tax return, you run down there to Turner Street, you buy a kilo of hash with it. Then you run up
and a hooker, right?
Yeah. No, then you run up, you run back up there to Parkland. You sell that for three times the amount of money you made. You run over to run back down to Turner Street, buy the weed from the guy. You do that for about 15 turns until you make about $300,000. And usually about then
is playing like drug wars over there.
That's when you get busted by the cops or shot.
I used to have that game on my Palm Pilot.
Yeah, that's a good game.
Oh, you're bored. You play. Yeah, Dope Wars.
I remember that.
It's hilarious. You can pay off the cops and shit with it.
Yeah. That game is evil because you sit there and you think, man, if I just took $100, went down the street, bought the weed for $30, and went uptown and sold it for, you know, 10 times the amount I paid for it.
Drive to Harlem.
That's a new car.
Yeah. Go to Manhattan.
Yeah. And then you inevitably get killed.
Then you have to risk that, you know, that lewds aren't selling for that much anymore. You know?
Then you get busted and you get sentenced to 10 years.
Yeah.
Yep.
And real life just isn't as easy as a game. Because you could always restart.
No kidding.
You know, speaking of games, I got two games I wanted to bring up today. You want me to do that now, or should we do that after?
You're kidding me.
Yeah. Do you want me to do that now?
Go for it.
All right. The first game, I was playing around on the Arch user repository, and I saw a game on there called Dungeon Rooms of Death. Did you play that?
Good name.
I'm sorry, Deadly Rooms of Death. Did you ever see that, Pat?
No.
All right, Deadly Rooms of Death. It's I just put the link in the web, in the chat room. It's a really cool game. It's a puzzler-type game. You're just a little guy that runs around with a sword, and it combines like a little bit of action with a puzzle in each room. The object of the game is on every floor of the dungeon that you're in. You have to wipe out all the monsters, and the monsters move in different patterns. You know, some come straight at you, some come from angles, some fly away from you, and you gotta move your character around in different formation to actually hit these guys. But there's a whole bunch of different things. You know, there's doors, there's one-way doors, there's switches and stuff. It's a pretty cool game, and as you progress through the levels, it gets harder and harder. Check out Deadly Rooms of Death. It's under the AUR repository. You can download binaries for it from their website. It's two thumbs up, something worth killing some time. What's really nice about it is you can go in, you can play a couple of rooms, exit out of the game. Next time you start it up, you're back where you left off. So it's something you can kill a few minutes with if you need a little diversion. I think it also runs under Windows, so there's no OS 10 version of the game. So two thumbs up. The other game I wanted to bring to people's attention, have you guys used the latest version of Nopix 4.02?
No, not recently.
No, I haven't, but I looked at some screenshots of it the other day. It looks nice.
It's sweet. We had a Dell machine at work that blew up. It has a SATA drive in it, and we wanted to make sure there wasn't anything we could get off the hard drive before we re-imaged it. I was using an older version of Nopix 3.6, which was not able to, didn't have support for the SATA drive, so it couldn't mount the hard drive in there. So I downloaded the latest version, 4.02, and pop that in there. It's really fast. I was surprised. Compared to the older versions, it's really, really blazingly fast. It even has a cool new desktop that comes up, and it's a highway where you're driving down the highway, and somebody took a picture, and it's got all the squiggly lines for the lights. So it is. It's a little perkier. Definitely two thumbs up. It did have support for the SATA, so we were able to read the drives. But we were playing around with it. I was looking at the games. There's a game in there called Enigma. And we fired this up, and Enigma was inspired by a game called OXYD, or OXD. I don't know how you pronounce that. That used to be on the Atari ST and Rock and Roll on the Amiga. And the object of the game is to find and uncover pairs of identically covered stones in each of these rooms. And you tap against the stone, and it shows a symbol. So you got to match. It's kind of like a memory game, but there's all sorts of obstacles along the way. And depending on what type of obstacle it is, if you hit it, you could blow up. Depending on the tile of the floor, determines how fast or what direction your ball could actually go in. The graphics are pretty good. It's a fun game. It's not to be confused with another game called Enigma that's available on Linux. But Jeff, definitely check it out to while away a few hours of time. And again, like Deadly Rooms of Death, it does keep track of your progress. So if you drop out, you could always come back in and pick up where you left off. So, you know, two games right there. Now, Enigma.
Hey, new CDs to try, new distribution CDs to try, OpenBSD just came out with their live CD as well.
Yeah, I saw that posted on the forum.
And, it's posted on the forum, and I'm not on the forum right now, so I forget what the hell the link is. If somebody has it real quick, stick it on the IRC chat. But I was looking at that real quick today, and I think that that's a neat thing. And by all means, if you guys like OpenBSD or just want to look at some BSD, some real, you know, BSD Unix kind of stuff, by all means, try that. And there's also one out for NetBSD, has a live CD as well. My preference being the NetBSD, just because I'm sort of partial to that. But just wanted to make mention of that as well, real quick.
Cool.
Hey, did you guys get a chance to read that study sponsored by the OSDL regarding cost of Linux compared to Windows?
I started to read part of it, but didn't get too far in that yet.
No, I didn't at all.
I can summarize.
I'm sure it's a bullshit thing, you know.
No, this is a good one.
Basically, you say that Linux is cheaper, the systems run better, and if there's problems, they're not as often, and it doesn't take as long to fix it as a Windows box. That's pretty much it. I mean, and then they go into detail.
Just what the hell there?
But
so it's the Get the Facts campaign that Microsoft's been running isn't really showing all the facts.
No.
Has it ever?
And then there was that document on the Microsoft site about how to remove Linux from your machine.
Right.
You saw that post in the bulletin board?
Yeah, I saw that. What are you going to do, huh?
Actually,
I heard that was an old post, an old article.
Was it?
I think there was an NT version of that one, too. How to remove Linux and install Windows NT.
People still run NT?
Microsoft doesn't want you to. They'd rather you run XP, but yeah, I think there's people still running NT.
We do at work. We have a couple machines that still run it.
That's
just because they can't run anything. They're too slow to run XP. Or 2000 or anyone.
Link's running NT over there.
Not right at this particular moment, but I will be again very, very soon after I recondition some old computers, yes.
Why?
No, by recondition, you mean vacuum them out?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I do mean vacuuming the nut. The scenario is this, right? We got some, we're running NT4 on some really, really asshole machines. And we just got a pile of new machines to replace them with, which are running XP Pro. And the old machines are like sitting in a pile, but what we also have is a bunch of terminals, right? You know, regular serial terminals. And the idea from upper management is that they want to replace these perfectly functioning serial terminals with some creepy old Dell boxes running NT again. So I have to take the old NT boxes that I just pulled off the floor and recondition them and vacuum them out and reload, you know, an image on them, an OS image on them, and stuff them back out on the floor to replace these wonderful terminals. So.
Why?
It's a stupid thing, you know.
Wait, are these are these the terminals, are these the old Apples that you're running using as terminals still, or are these just straight terminals?
No, these are terminals, regular old serial terminals.
And they want to replace those for what reason?
Because
no
they
good
work.
Reason. No good reason as far. Yeah, pretty much. They work. They work all the time. They're easy to fix, so we're going to replace them with something that doesn't.
Job security.
Something like that.
You'll be fixing them for a long time.
Are they going to be running more software on these?
No, at least not initially. I mean, I think that's what the whole idea was. If we replace the serial terminals with these NT boxes, that, you know, we could, if we needed to, run other software on the NT boxes that, you know, we can't run multiple things on the terminals. So that was like the idea. However, I don't know what they have in mind for running on, you know, running on these old machines, and they can't really do a lot. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, but you know, perhaps if I go through and tighten them all up a bit and clean them out real good, maybe they'll be good enough for the 30 some odd stations or 25 stations, I think.
Why don't you recommend running Linux on them?
That I have to replace serial terminals with.
If you run Linux, you could run multiple things on
them. You know what? I did, but yeah, I did do that, and I probably could get away with doing that, actually, but for one thing. The application that they need to run, that the terminals actually access, is a SCO Unix box, and SCO Unix does not have a sane terminal type. For instance, SCO ANSI is like different from regular ANSI, and Linux does not have a SCO ANSI terminal type. In fact, like nothing has a SCO ANSI terminal type except for SCO. And you can't find a terminal software package that supports SCO ANSI. Like, in order to telnet into the SCO box and run the application on the SCO box that everybody's running. So, the only thing that I can find that actually does this without too much of a problem is a software called NetTerm that runs on Windows. If I could find something like NetTerm that ran under Linux, then I would do that in a flat second.
Does NetTerm run under Wine?
Not that I can get it to do, no. I've tried, but can't get it to go, man.
How much does NetTerm cost you there, or is that free?
It's a freeware, shareware thing.
Okay. Should we play the interview?
Might as well. I'm gonna drop off.
Okay.
Save the bandwidth. Save your bandwidth, all right?
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Yeah, me too, and I'll be back on as soon as the interview's over. So.
Do you want to... Should I just introduce the interview?
Sure, go ahead.
Oh, all right. Well, we were supposed to have Dean Haglund on tonight, and unfortunately, he wasn't able to do the interview with us live on the show. this evening. But we were able to talk to him and record an interview with him last night. It's about an hour long. It's a great interview. Start off by saying some of it's not work safe. Of course, you know, the show isn't always work safe, but it's a pretty fun interview. He's a great guy. And without any further ado, I will fire this up, and you guys enjoy speaking
right,
with
drop it off.
Dean Haglin for the next few minutes. And everybody's dropping off there. And
I'll see you after the interview.
Yeah, and I gotta get to it. So here we go. Dean Haglin, what everybody's been waiting for. Yep.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we got Dean Haglin, formerly of the X-Files and a Lone Gunman. Welcome, Dean.
Hey guys,
how are
you?
A lot of other things, by the way, too, right? Yeah.
And a lot of other things. That's right. I'm a busy guy. Yeah, and thanks for having me on the show, by the way. Pleasure to be here. Sorry it took
thanks
so long.
Thanks for taking the time. That's okay.
Absolutely.
So, Dean, are you a geek? Is that, I guess that's the first question I'd like to...
No. Yeah, I guess, you know, it's all relative. So, in Hollywood standards, I'm pretty geeky. In that, you know, I can fix my own laptop and run both Mac and PC. Does that make me totally geeky? And I've invented a laptop cooling system. Does that put me over the edge?
What are you running on that laptop?
It's definitely a star, right?
Say what?
What are you running on that laptop?
What do I run on that laptop?
Yeah, what operating systems?
Oh, well, you know, I got, I didn't go Tiger. I'm still Panther, because Tiger's got that search engine that bugs me, Spotlight. So I'm running my entire production studio off of this. Final Cut, HD, DVD Studio Pro 3. When I go to the conventions, I actually do stand-up comedy, film it, go back to my room, put it onto the hard drive, then burn DVDs and sell the DVDs back to the fans who saw the show.
Oh, cool.
All within about a five-hour turnaround.
Oh, that's really
that's
good.
Awesome.
So you're really into
the whole
video editing thing, then?
Yeah, well, you know, it's the spirit of the independent film that happens down here in Los Angeles that... everyone has a camera, and everyone has a laptop, and they're all editing and putting out movies left, right, and center. And, in fact, on my website, you can go and buy these DVDs of my comedy show from various cities that I've appeared at, including Valley Forge. Just saying that because you're nearby.
Right.
And that's one of the things. And then, of course, because of that, my laptop gets incredibly hot and locks up, and hence the chill pack.
Now,
speaking of your laptop, what I have noticed, and correct me if I'm wrong, I watch a lot of TV. Well, I watch a lot of TV. I watch a lot of, like, sci-fi kind of stuff. And every time I see somebody whipping their laptop out on TV, and even in your old shows, like on the X-Files and the Lone Gunman, every time you see somebody pull a laptop out or a computer out, it's a Macintosh. What's
yeah,
the deal with that?
The deal with that is that Steve Jobs lived up in San Jose and came down here frequently, and he would muscle his way into prop departments, giving out free laptops to use props. So these prop guys knew they didn't have to go buy anything, so they would just have product placement for free. So he would be very aggressive to get his computers onto the lot, as it were, onto the studios. And then the studios would just throw them on camera pretty quickly. So,
basically
he was clever that way.
He bribed you guys, basically, is what you're saying.
It's just a free laptop, right?
Yeah, it was just a free laptop. In fact,
Steve, if you're listening, I'll take a free laptop.
Well, you know, we got flown up to San Jose for the launch of OS X, and that's where I learned all the secrets about the Titanium G4. I got drunk with all the engineers, and they told me, you know, they make these things fast and thin, but they have no cooling system, so they overheat and warp the hard drive and slow down the processor. So once I found that out, that got me thinking.
And that was a chill pack.
That was, before the show, like you asked, how did I come up with it? Well, I had my titanium G4. I'm watching a movie, and about an hour into the movie, it just locks up. You know, everything freezes. I get the little circular rainbow that Mac always has on there. And at the same time, I had a knee injury, and I had a blue gel on my knee, keeping it cold. And when I moved the laptop to my knee, the movie started up again. And I went, aha! Because, you see, not only was my major theater in college, but my minor was in physics and exothermodynamics, which I thought I was wasting my time till that day. And then, of course, I remembered everything about phase change and hot-to-cold ratios, and lo and behold, the Chilpak was born.
Now that is cool.
Now, this had nothing to do with those stories going around on the Internet about people become sterilized because they had their laptops on their laptops.
See, now that's exactly what I was going to mention next. I saw this. First time I saw the Chilpak advertised was right after I saw a bunch of those stories about those guys burning their dick holding their laptops on their lap.
Exactly. And I'll tell you,
I thought to myself, now Dean Hagelin is too cool to burn his dick on a laptop.
Clearly,
so
my dick is still intact.
Better.
Yes, I am blister free. I like to point that out. What was weird about that coincidence was that was exactly around the same month I hired a publicist to start putting, getting the word of the Chilpak out there. And
so, was your publicist
was so
that started the stories?
What's that?
So it was your publicist that started this story.
She was the one that found the article and was all excited that this would save men's fertility. I was a little reticent, but once I realized that guy was actually suing Apple for burning the tip of his dick, then I thought, well, if he's going for it, then perhaps I should too.
Hey, what the hell?
I know. I don't want to hear, I don't even want to read those court transcriptions. I don't know how he uses his laptop, but he definitely needs a Chilpak. More ways than one.
So you're saving people's laptops as well as increasing the population for the next 5 years.
It's what I do, you know. I try to give back.
Now, you know, reading about the Chilpak, it seems like, of course, your idea for coming up to it, you were using a medical ice pack at the time, is it essentially the same thing? You pop these chill packs into the freezer for a while, and then when, do you actually have like a pretty hard block, a frozen block that you put the laptop on and use it for a while?
No, actually, the I have a different polymer that doesn't actually get hard. It always stays soft, even at minus 40, I think, is minus 40 degrees Fahrenheit. It still is malleable. And so it's slightly different than the ones that you use for medical that get, like, rock hard. So that way it's always flexible on the surface, so that it'll fit to whatever position you want your laptop. And then on the bottom we have a material that is a kind of an insulator so that you're actually not freezing your legs if you're actually using it on your lap. All the cold is pointing up instead of down.
That's a
and
damn
then
good
the whole
idea.
Thing is covered. What's that?
I said, because that's the next thing I was going to ask. You freeze your nuts off then. But no, that's a good
no.
idea.
Yeah, not at all. No, that part we've insulated to as much as we could. And it also makes it one even surface so that it's not flopping in between your legs or anything like that. Boy,
I
that
bet there's some
too.
Interesting stories on product testing for that one, huh?
Yeah, we went through a few versions, I'm sure. And then it's all covered in a material that prevents condensation, so no moisture will develop. You're not going to short out your system and got nothing to worry about. So it lasts forever, and it's environmentally safe and nothing to plug in and put in the freezer and last 1 to 4 hours.
Is it non-toxic?
Non-toxic.
All right, so if my kids eat it, we don't have to worry about it.
The kids
believe it or not, that is the manufacturer said it's food-grade polymer-based gel. And I think they put something bitter in it so dogs don't actually eat the damn thing.
Oh, does it have a nutritional value then?
No. I got to contact the FDA right after this phone call.
So if you get stranded out there and you got nothing but your laptop and the chill pack, yeah, it won't sustain
That's
you.
That's right. During Burning Man, you run out of food on that last day.
Yeah.
Just you and your laptop and a chill pack, then by all means.
Have you ever gone to that?
I have, actually.
Is it as freaky as it seems?
Well, I went, it was I went back in the early days, like second or third year they had it, and it was only like 10,000 people, so it sort of seemed like just a band of hobos before they got really extravagant with the shows and stuff like that. So, it was freaky then, but from what I've seen in the pictures and on the web now, it seems like it's really extravagantly freaky. Like with the stage shows and the torches and the stuff.
That's like a lot of performance art, right?
Yeah, yeah. Everybody goes out to the desert. It's like 60,000. A city of 60,000 suddenly appears with tents and bicycles. And there's all sorts of, it's like Mardi Gras for miscreants or something. And then they burn a huge 60-foot effigy at the end of it, and everybody goes home.
How pagan.
It's very pagan.
But to get back on topic, how are the sales of the Chill Pack going? Have you sold a lot of these things?
Yeah, incredible. And all over the world, too. I'm going to Geneva, of all things. I've been setting up to go to the International Inventors Expo, which sort of makes me laugh. But from there, with the infomercial and that, we should see it in stores everywhere by this time next year.
Cool. Hopefully you get to meet Rumpelpeel.
Would he go to that? I don't know if he's the head of that. Do you remember the pocket fisherman? I think that's Billy Rumpelpeel.
He's the inventor guy.
You can see if he wants to swap a pocket fisherman for a
chill pack. That's right. Listen, I'll give you two pocket fishermen and a rotisserie chicken desk for the...
I got one of them. They're great.
Do you really?
Yeah.
What, the rotisserie?
Set it and forget it, baby.
I love the rotisserie.
Set it and forget it.
I have the pasta maker, too.
You know, Aaron has that spray hair.
Oh, yeah. The spray on chia pet stuff.
The spray hair.
It's like felt or something, right, on the can? Well, hopefully the chill pack has a little more advantage than the spray-on hair.
Oh, man. Hey, Dean, I got to ask you, are you a fan of science fiction, or you just act in whatever parts you get?
No, I'm actually a fan. My brother was more of a fan, so I had to watch what he watched, so that's how I got into it. Older brothers. But I've been watching all those Irwin Allen things since I was a kid. Land of the Giants, Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. All the classics.
Star Trek, The Prisoner?
I'm more The Prisoner than Star Trek. Star Trek I didn't really get into until it was, I guess, the revival in the 90s sort of thing. I somehow missed it growing up. But definitely The Prisoner. In fact, we're doing a movie now that I wrote that we've actually cast Patrick McGowan.
Cool.
Yeah, he's 80 something now, but he's still got the spirit in him.
What was the last thing he was in, Braveheart?
Yeah, he did Braveheart. He did this. I think he did this other movie. I don't know if it got released or not, but he was talking about that. And now we just showed him our script, and he's thrilled to be doing it. So we're excited.
Have you just finished up filming something, or are you in production?
Yeah, I just booked a thing for Sci-Fi Network called Dead and Deader, which is one of the fastest-paced zombie movies I've ever seen. With, the military, there's suddenly zombies everywhere, there's scorpions coming out of everybody's flesh, and then I'm a funeral director in there. And, it should be pretty cool. It's called Dead and Deader, and premiering around May, I think.
Cool.
But you can go to my website, and I'll have all the details there at deanhagelin.com.
Now, do you code up that website yourself, or you have somebody doing that for you?
I'm coding myself, for crying out loud.
I got to ask a question.
All right.
That's what I'm doing. Yeah, I had a website back in 95 that I was hand coding, for crying out loud. I mean, you know, pre-Dreamweaver and Front Page, I was just doing it in Notepad, which took forever. That's why it was only just black and green, you know, it wasn't fancy. And then I had to stop that for legal reasons, and then just started up my DeanHaglund.com recently in the last 3 or 4 years.
So you've been on the web since the beginning, then?
I was in the early days, exactly. In fact, I had just the EDU address when I was at college, and then AOL jumped in and screwed everything up. And then up till about 2 years ago, I had a CompuServe address that was just the all generated numbers, 10.32.20.327.
Mm-hmm.
So I had the address that was before you could actually get your name, when they just, like, dumped numbers at you. But that got cut up in spam filters, so I had to get the name.
So how did you go back in time? How'd you land the X-Files gig?
Oh, my God. That is hilarious, because that was just an audition. It was one day. Originally, the gunmen were just supposed to be on one episode, a one-shot deal. And at the time, it was one of the first news groups was Alt TV X-Files that everybody went to. And when the gunmen showed up, everybody at the news group went, aha, this proves that the writers and producers are lurking in our news group because they wrote characters that reflect this culture, which in fact mm-hmm. was true. So they kept bringing us back to spike interest on the news group back and forth. So kind of this really cool symbiotic relationship that we had with the fan that was immediate and web connected. To hell with what, you know, ratings and everything else went. So that's how our role grew to finally, we, you know, 8 years later, we get our own spinoff. So.
Well, you know what's really cool about that, Dean, is that I believe that you owe me a debt of gratitude because obviously they wrote your character with my brilliance, and they wrote Frohickey's character with my good looks.
Is that so, right? Wow. So wait, you have the brilliance of Langley and the looks of Frohickey.
Yeah, right.
Put that on your business card.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, you think you're joking. I believe it was 1997, Tom Braidwood was voted in a British magazine the sexiest man in science fiction. He beat out Scott Bakula. I mean, like, I don't know what the hell the women
That's
were thinking
great.
That year. But there you go. If you have that look, pull up that article.
Well, all I have to
that
say
that look
you guys,
just taller, younger, and blonde hair, right?
You guys were lucky that the X-Files were on when it was on, because if you guys were on now, you would have been canceled after 6 episodes, the way Fox has been lately with science fiction types of shows.
Isn't it true? I mean,
they killed Firefly off, Space Above and Beyond, Millennium.
Absolutely. Millennium. And even shows now.
Best thing you can do for sci-fi is to get on, or best thing you can do for those kind of shows now is to get on the Sci-Fi Network.
But even sci-fi, they're not really interested in doing sci-fi series. I mean, they have Battlestar Galactica, right. But there have been other series pitched to them that they have passed on that were, you know, what they considered too spacey, in that there are spaceships and outer space kind of thing.
Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, Farscape. Well, but they picked up Farscape from another network, though. Didn't WB have that?
I forget where it was on originally. I think it was independent. I think it was in syndication. That was produced down in Australia.
Yeah, where it's much cheaper. Friends of mine were writing on that and said it was the oddest experience, because they would just write their first draft and then they wouldn't get to rewrite it. The director would rewrite the next draft as he wanted, and sort of kind of a different system over there than the way it is here.
Speaking of cheaper and movie production, is that why a lot of these new and cool shows are done in Canada? as opposed to the United States? Is it just a location thing, or is there cheaper there, the laws better? What is it?
Well, you have the advantage of the Canadian dollar, of course, it being 20 cents cheaper, so immediately you get $1.20 to your dollar budget. And then there's tax incentives, but now most of the states have gotten wise to that and are offering basically the same incentives. So the advantage now is that there is kind of a different union structure up there for actors. They have a different, there's a Canadian union, so there's not so much a residual base as just a one-time payment, sort of a buyout kind of situation. So that's a lot of the advantage why they go up there and shoot. But the locations are great, too.
You're Canadian, right?
I'm originally from Canada, yeah, from Vancouver. So when, you know, the X-Files was just a local thing for me. And then I started actually traveling, doing stand-up comedy all over North America. So I moved to L.A. and then the show moved to L.A. So it was like the show was following me.
I think you're our 2,000th Canadian that we've had on.
Is that right?
Yeah, we just have a lot of Canadians on.
Wow. Dan, did you just buy a chill pack or a comic book?
I bought the comic book.
You did buy the comic book. I just showed up on my BlackBerry. How tight is that? I'm sending you one right now. I'll even sign it for you.
All right. That's awesome. Because
that's awesome.
I'm a big comic book fan, and I was a big fan of the Lone Gunman.
Oh, thanks, man.
So the
comic book is called Why the Lone Gunman Was Canceled. It's an all-true story of how we found out about the show and how it fell apart. And there's including the reference to the fact that the pilot episode, we stopped the plane from flying into the World Trade Center 8 months before it actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
Which freaked everybody out, I'll tell you.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, when you look at that episode now, like if you get it on DVD, it's freaky. It's chilling.
Who wrote that episode? Do you remember?
Yeah, that was, it was all four of them, actually. Osama? Yeah, no. He wasn't taking scripts back then, oddly enough. No, it was Chris Carter, Vince Gilligan, Frank Botnitz, and John Scheibman. I'll put their names to that one. But I think it was Vince who had read some Tom Clancy novel that had a plane flying into the World Trade Center. So he put that in there.
So why did you guys get canceled?
Don't ruin it. I just bought the book.
Look, I can't blow the ending. The reason I wrote it is because it is so complicated, and you know, some would tell you one reason, some would tell you another, depending on, you know, who you talk to. So the comic book that I did is a way to try to address all those different angles, all those different perspectives from different people.
You know what I thought was really cool when I was looking through your website earlier today. I respect you as an actor. You were in a couple of my most favorite shows, and I know you're a brilliant inventor, of course, because you invented the chill pack.
Thank you.
But what I thought was really cool is I went and I started looking at the pages that you have available from your comic book, and you're a very good artist as well.
So I highly
encourage anybody who likes comic books to absolutely to go to your website and get that.
In fact, my mom doesn't know why I went into acting. She thinks I threw away a fabulous cartooning career. They're coming to get me. There we go. What am I, in London all of a sudden? What's that sound? My mom always wanted to, always loved my artwork, and, you know, she's very supportive of my acting career. But she said, you know, if you ever want to give that up and go back to cartooning, it's waiting for you.
Which is not
a thing for the parents to say.
How'd you get into acting?
I was a class clown since grade one. And so I did the school plays. We had a very progressive principal who would always have theater nights two times a year, and I was in every play. And then from there, I started taking acting classes when I was 12 and started doing theater all over Canada. And never stopped, basically. Not really a great story, I know. Doing it since I was a kid. Me and Danny Bonaducci. You know, that's not right.
Do you know him?
Say that again?
Do you know him?
Actually, I've been on his radio show a couple times. More when he was in New York. In fact, I have a picture of me beside Danny with his pants around his ankle, sitting on a toilet smoking a cigarette. How I got that story, how I got that picture is a long story. But but that's the one I'm saving for my next website to upload. Good picture. He did stand-up comedy, too. And he has far worse stories. He hated it. And he would always get drunk. In fact, he tells the story. I don't know if he tells this story. Here's my favorite Danny Bonaducci story, if we could digress for just a second. He was really nervous, and he was doing comedy at this club somewhere. And normally he starts on stage with a bottle of tequila, and then by the end of the show, his tequila's done. That's how he knows he's done 45 minutes. But this particular night, the opening act had gone on too long, and he was extra nervous. So he had pretty much finished the entire bottle of tequila before he even stepped on stage. So he's introduced, ladies and gentlemen, here he is from the party, Danny Bonaducci. And he's so drunk that when they open the curtain, he walks up to the microphone, he just goes, hi, everybody, and throws up, just barfs, like, right on the stage. The crowd goes nuts. But,
pretty vile.
Yeah. Behind the curtain, the manager had seen this, and he freaks out and goes to the comic, goes, oh my God, get out there. Like, and the comic doesn't know what happened. He's thinking, like, Danny's had a heart attack. So he goes just running through the curtains and just wipes out into Danny's barf and lands flat in his back on the stage, spraying barf across the entire club. The crowd goes crazy. It's like a Gallagher show that's even funnier. And then Danny just goes, good night, and walks off stage. And that was his final stand-up comedy show.
Hey, caramba.
Yeah. Ay, caramba. I am so glad I wasn't there to witness it.
So when you go out on stage, do you take a bottle of vodka with you then?
I do not, actually. I don't even... after that story, that pretty much put the kibosh on any drinking, or barfing, for that matter. Try to keep it on site. No, my stand-up's a little different in that I improvise an episode of The X-Files live on stage, so that every show is completely different, and it's based on audience feedback, and I drag people up on stage to play Mulder and that sort of thing, and hilarity ensues.
And where are you going to be in the upcoming weeks? I saw Israel.
Yeah, I'm going to be in Tel Aviv. Let's see. Looking at my calendar, I got. I'm going to be at MarsCon in Minneapolis from the 2nd through the 4th or 5th, and then I'll be in London for two nights in April 1st and 2nd, and then I'll be in Tel Aviv. That's right, with Claudia Christian. Her and I will be improvising at some science fiction convention there. For everybody who's in Israel, come on down.
Yeah.
Claudia Christian from Babylon 5.
Yeah. She is, you would not believe this, she's one of the funniest improvisers I know. She's completely fearless and really funny. She does a very good Captain Janeway from Voyager, very good impression. And she's so much fun. And then the week after that, I'll be at the Denver Starfest in Denver, Colorado, with Gary Jones from Stargate. And it will be the premiere of our improvised episode of Star Trek, where I will be Spock and he will be Kirk, and we will be making up episodes of Star Trek. And we have not yet even discussed what the heck we're going to do, so it's going to be completely wild and a lot of laughs. Gary and I have improvised together for 15 years now, so it'll be a tight show.
You do a lot of the conventions?
I do a lot of the conventions. It's a great way, because as soon as I got the Chill Pack, I knew that the conventions have a lot of the early adopters and computer stuff, so it was a easy way and a cheap way for me to market, do some viral marketing and getting it out there. So I bring a couple Chill Packs to every show. So for those who don't want to buy online just yet, you can come to Minneapolis or Tel Aviv or Denver, or I'll be in Paris and FedCon in Germany in April. And, well, go to my website. You'll see my entire list of places I'll be going. And so, yeah, I've been doing a lot of conventions in the last year or two.
How are the X-Files and the Gunman received there? Are they big?
Yeah. Yeah, they're really big. In fact, they're much. It seems much bigger in Europe. I think that the, you know, don't trust the government thing that they had going through the Gunman and through the X-Files, of course, were played very well overseas. So everybody really glommed onto that. And in fact, the Lone Gunman DVD just came out throughout Europe like not even 4 months ago. So the sales are really strong there, and we're getting invited over there a lot.
Do you miss doing a Lone Gunman?
Do I miss it? Not. I mean, it was long hours, and it was a lot of fun. But, you know, it would be kind of sad if, you know, you're still doing the same show. How many years would that have been? Six years? I think all shows, you know, sort of have their proper shelf life. So I don't really miss it. I've been really busy doing a ton of other things, and it's nice to connect to the fans, and I, you know, I'm grateful for everyone who did watch it, and a lot of fun to do. But I've also cut all my hair off now, and, you know, that was my real hair on the show.
Mm-hmm. Take you a long time to grow that?
What's that?
Did it take you a long time to grow that?
Yeah, since... let's see, I was basically grade 5, started growing my hair. In fact, I sell pictures of me in grade 5 at the convention so you can see the beginning of the hair growth.
People and, buy them?
You would be surprised how many people buy my grade 5 headshot.
Did you sell the hair, too?
Yeah. The hair?
Yeah, the hair.
The actual hair?
Yeah. I mean, you probably could have made some money off of that.
Okay. You
know, there's some weird people out there, you know?
What?
There's a guy, he came up to me, he runs a trading card company, and he wants to put my hair in a trading card, like 5 or 6 strands. And I've asked fans what they thought, and everybody went, yeah, I'd buy that. So I just gave it to him, like, last month.
So there you go.
All my hair. So now he's going to break it. Now, if, you know, everybody can buy my hair in a trading card, commit a murder, break open the card, leave my hair strands there, and I'll be doing 25 to life.
Perfect DNA evidence.
DNA evidence, hey, I know.
Dean Haglund's murder spree across America.
That's right.
At least he didn't take any blood samples.
That guy really gets around.
At least he didn't take out other DNA samples from you.
What's that?
At least he didn't take other DNA samples from you, you know, like blood or sperm or saliva.
Yeah, that's a trading card I'm not giving out at all.
There's going to be some Dean cloning going on soon.
That's right. Well, hey, if anybody can clone me, by all means, send me the clone because I'm so busy here I could use a couple of me around.
So is there any chance that if they do another X-Files movie that they'll bring you back from the dead? Because your character got a lethal radiation dose in the second to last X-Files episode, right?
Yeah, well, it was a some sort of purple virus, I think. I don't know if it was radioactive virus. But you never saw our bodies in the coffin. And with a level 5 quarantine steel coffin, they're supposed to be fitted to the actual person. And if you look at that final funeral scene, all 3 coffins are the same size, yet of the gunmen, one of us is shorter than the other 2.
Uh-oh.
Guy's got it in.
That's exactly. Production design saves us again.
What are the realistically? What are the chances of another X-Files movie?
Well, there's a outline script in already written. There is deals in place with Frank, Vince, David Duchovny, apparently Jillian. The only one they can't make a deal with is Chris Carter and Fox. There is still a long way to go in that negotiation. So,
bad blood between them, or?
Yeah, you know, I believe there's even a lawsuit going on. So if that doesn't make bad blood, I don't know what does. But yeah, there's a lot of animosity, it seems, from 10 years. You know, you think you have a hit show, everybody would treat you better, but it seems that at Fox, the policy is to treat you worse. So as the show became more successful, the pressure mounted and became pretty intense on those guys, I got to say.
Who's suing who?
That's too bad, because the only person that really hurts is the fans who would like to see that kind of stuff, you know?
Exactly. But, you know, I don't think Fox really operates for the fans. They have some sort of other global domination thing in mind.
So who's suing who?
Yeah, well, that brings us right back into... Yeah, it brings us right back into IT, which is the global domination of the know-nothing suits who are ruling for greed only.
Exactly. I know. It's a bit of a screwed-up scenario, and hopefully that will change with the upcoming Cultural Revolution. Yay! Who's with me?
Right.
But who's suing who? It's Chris is suing Fox, I believe. I don't know if you can read about it in Smoking Gun or not. Website, but I think it has to do with a similar thing that David sued Fox for, which was money's owed on shows in syndication and that sort of thing. Fox often sells their show to FX, which is their own cable network, and they'll often sell it under market value, basically transferring $1 from one pocket to the other, and then saying, oh, it only made a dollar, sorry.
That's the way to do it.
Money laundering.
Yeah, a little blood. Yeah, like, when you could do that when you're a major corporation.
Didn't Enron get busted for that?
Say what?
Didn't Enron get busted for that?
Yeah, I think that's where I think they all go to the same business school.
Fuck you, Karen.
Seems like that's a standard operating procedure.
Well, let me ask you, how different was it going from you know, a supporting role when you guys were on the X-Files and going to your own TV show? I'm sure it was a lot more work and a lot more intense, right?
Yeah, it certainly was. And it was, you know, it's a lot more fun when you can just blow in and say your lines and eat the snacks and then get the hell out. But when you're actually, you know, carrying the show, there's a whole different mindset that you have to bring to it. And, I mean, we had prepared for that transition, to be sure, but the fact that we were conscious of a transition was the big difference. Because, you know, it was fun doing both shows, but definitely The Gunman was a lot more full-time and a lot more work. What's that in the background? Somebody got an old dot matrix printer?
No, I think that's the whirl of Dan's server in the background.
Is it your fan again, Dan?
Good God, man.
It's usually the fan and the screaming kids in the background.
Oh, my God. Your server a Commodore 64 or what?
I think Dan dropped off because his kids are at each other's throats. So.
Oh, is that what's going on?
Yeah, that's why you don't hear him.
Yeah, we're all on the show remotely tonight. I'm coming in from home in Easton, and so is Pat, and you're coming in from your house, right, Dean? Is that where you're coming in from?
I'm actually in my production office at the moment.
Oh, all right. Well, then your production office.
Yes.
And you're in L.A., right?
Yeah, I'm in Los Angeles, right in Hollywood proper.
Uh-huh. And then Dan's in the next city over from Pat and myself.
It's not
where
really a
city.
Maybe
right at the moment.
It's not a city, man. It's more like a...
Bethlehem's a city. It's not a city like L.A., but it's a city.
It's a city like a neighborhood.
Population?
Dan was commenting on your noisy server fan in the background.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
If that's what it is.
Yeah, that's what it is. No, it is. It's a compact server, so it has a little, you know, jet engine in it.
Twin turbine jet engine, yeah.
Compact. We were laughing, saying it was Commodore 64.
Yeah, no. You have to bolt it to the table or else it'll fly away.
Is that right? You know, sometimes you want that.
Yeah. It doesn't need a chill pack, apparently.
It sounds like it's whirring.
It's
oh, you know, fans don't really cool. It's just if the ambient air happens to be cooler than the air around the CPU.
Right.
That's the cooling fact.
There
but it's
go.
Not like... the reason a fan feels cool on the skin is because you have moisture evaporating off your skin, but there's no moisture on the CPU.
Right.
Ergo, there wouldn't be any evaporation or any phase change cooling. See? Exothermodynamics. Who thinks I was lying?
I guess I need a chill pack, then.
Get on there and order one, Dan.
You know how to get them. Chillpack.com. P-A-K.
Dude, I had a question for you. Going back around to the beginning of this conversation, there was a mention
yes.
of why are all the laptops or all the computers that you see on shows, most of them are Apples. And one of the things I've started noticing is you can identify that they're Apples, but they're covering up the top of the case where that little Apple logo is on a lot of shows these days. Do you know why they do that?
Yeah, it has to do with actual payment.
Uh-huh.
If the Mac store just comes by and drops off a bunch of Macs and they use them, the legal department is supposed to call and get clearance to use the logo. But if they don't get clearance from Apple, they're not technically allowed to show the logo, so they have to cover it up.
So they're just lazy.
They're just lazy. Or Apple may say, you know...
They want some kind of royalty payment or something.
Exactly. Or that the show wants money from Apple to use their computers, and Apple doesn't want to pay, so then they cover up the logo as well as a way of not to advertise it, even though you know it's an Apple.
So they're just being a little more greedier.
It's a world of big business. It's corporate America.
I got a good question for you. We talk a lot about codecs and file sharing and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
What's the general mentality of Hollywood? Are those guys quaking in their boots? I mean, are they afraid of this big underswell of people in the community, you know, stealing their stuff? You know,
they are and they aren't. It depends. The music industry has been decimated by all the file sharing. And but at the same time, there are bands that now use that, like through MySpace and all that sort of thing, to really get a lot of traction and leverage and get their music out there. So for the large corporations that used to have a bottleneck on music distribution and therefore could charge whatever they want, that stranglehold seems to be falling apart through these things, and now that model is what all the studios are fearing as well. So everybody's rushing around to figure out new economic models, like Steven Soderbergh's Bubble, which comes out theatrically. You can get on pay-per-view and on DVD all on the same day. So are they quaking in the boots? No, they say they got it covered, but I think somewhere they're quickly thinking. They're trying to stay flexible so that they can stay on top of it and not be blindsided like the music industry was.
They got the lawyers waiting to go.
Say that again?
They got their army of lawyers waiting to pounce.
Yes, and programmers, too. It seems like everybody's trying to figure out all sorts of ways of protecting and copywriting and scrambling all sorts of images.
Yes, DRM is a big issue, and for the most part, we're against it.
Mm-hmm.
But I can understand where the studios are coming from. You know, they don't want the well to dry out, you know?
But, you know, the question is, does it dry out? I mean, I can name hundreds of actors and thousands of filmmakers that are here in the streets around me that are brilliant and talented and can't get a film made to save their life. You know, but they're trying to get a studio film made. They could make a film and get it out to the fans through these other distribution channels that are popping up, you know, spontaneously.
Have you had a chance to see Star Trek New Voyages, is the fan film that these guys are doing? And they've actually got a lot of the Star Trek writers and even some of the main actors involved in it.
Yeah, I heard about this, but I haven't had a chance to see it.
It's really great.
Is it really well done? Because that's what everybody's saying.
It really is. It's a very impressive, actually.
Go ahead.
With the fan films, in my opinion, the fan films, the weakest thing is usually the acting. But with these guys, it's pretty good. It's pretty strong, I think.
Really? And is it online right now?
Yeah, you can pull it off at BitTorrent. There's like two or three episodes that you can pull down.
Wow. Well, and that's a good case in point. But, you know, these guys are probably doing it for free or very little money.
Well, I think what the agreement was with Paramount is that they're allowed to use the characters and the storylines, but they're not allowed to make any profit off of it.
Right. Which is lots of fun if you have another source of income. But then, you know, there's people here that kind of do that for a living, and it becomes a sort of weird issue of how are you going to pay your freaking mortgage in this real estate market.
Sure. You got to be realistic.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about actors in the film industry. You also talk about musicians. I mean, the record companies, they bleed their artists. You know, these people are making, you know, 1-2% off of album sales. You know, you have
Absolutely.
Someone who's a multi-million-dollar sale, and you know they owe this, you know, the record companies millions of dollars.
Yeah, and the more albums you sell, the less money you make on a lot of these contracts. It's a diminishing return thing that's so bizarre. That's why Alanis Morissette was so smart with Jagged Little Pill. She just came in and she said, you know, they put down this contract, oh, you get, you know, 100,000 off the first week and 200, you know, whatever. She said, no, all I want is a dollar for every album sold. And they go, well, we only sell 1,000, you only get $1,000. She goes, yeah, but I can track it on Billboard magazine, because that will be our arbitrator. And that album sold 50 million copies. And it was like one of the largest payouts that the record company ever had to make.
And that's the last time they ever did that, right?
Yeah, never
I think
that
they
again,
never
right.
did that again. But she came in as a 19-year-old, and they thought, what the hell? It, you know, it'll never do anything.
Weren't you in one of the videos?
I was, yeah.
I could have sworn I remember you in a video.
Yeah. I was playing some AM DJ. Atlantis, of course, you know, all us Canadians, we hang out down here in Los Angeles, so. Our secret little club.
When you're in a show, movie, whatever, and you're sitting in front of a computer, I take it that it's a blank screen and they just put whatever's on the computer in post-production?
Incorrect.
Incorrect.
They often have guys with Director 7 program building the actual screens that you're actually seeing, and they're reading the script and actually trying to make it make sense. So they're actually researching what, you know, Linux systems look like and that sort of thing, and then building it just as sort of a, you know, superficial overlay. But then you'll have hotkeys on your keyboard that you can bring up other screens and launch movies and that sort of thing, depending on what is needed in the scene. So often I would sit at a computer, and then some guy would come to me and go, okay, return does this, hit Alt-F to do that, R does this, you know, K does that sort of thing. And then so I'd be typing, and then I'd hit the return, and up would come that screen, and then I hit R, then I hit K, just when I would want that, when I'm saying my lines.
Well, that's
pretty
cool.
You actually had to do... Yeah, so it was pretty cool. So it looked like you knew exactly what you're doing, and you could see that there were certain hotkeys, and then the rest of the keys didn't do anything, so you could just whack away at them and then hit return, and up would come screen. Some, you know, I really enjoy that. There are other actors who don't want that, and then they will sit off camera and control it remotely and then just hit the screens so that the screens will come up as he's talking. So the guy just concentrates on his lines and doesn't have to worry about hitting keys. But I always enjoy hitting the keys because that sort of, you know, brought me into the reality of it also. It was way cooler.
So have you been
when the camera was reversed and you couldn't see the screen, I was playing solitaire.
Sorry. Have you been a long-time computer user then?
Yes. Let's see. I had, what was my first computer? A Hyperion with an amber screen that I actually got to blow up and churn smoke out of the back. I was very proud of that. Then I had a sort of PS2 in 91 and, you know, would cannibalize stuff, would, you know, build stuff, and now I just have a shuttle and a couple Macs. So not as adventurous as I used to be.
Speaking of Macs, do you do any command line stuff with the Mac?
No, you know what? I don't. I'm underutilizing my Mac, really. I just use it more as a DVD outputter than any of the command line stuff. In fact, I do all my my web coding over on my PC, too.
What do you use?
Oh. What's that?
What programs do you use to do your encoding?
I'm Dreamweaver mostly, and then, of course, all the graphic work is done through Photoshop and a bit of Illustrator, and then I'm taking just the graphic work from Final Draft, the film stuff, compressing it through compressor from Final Draft and dumping it over to the PC. Nothing fancy.
Yeah, we're masochists. We do video in Linux.
Oh, my God. I got a Linux Renhat that I've loaded on twice and unloaded because I want it to be on a pristine system because I'm so dying to use it. But then I think I've missed the... dropped the ball on the learning curve on that. Or is Red Hat really dumb? Some people say it's like the Microsoft of the Linux world, so
it's
now
become
I'm wary.
It's become very corporate.
Those bastards!
You gotta run Arch Linux. It's a fellow Vancouver person. Judd Vinay?
Oh, that's right. Is he, but he's not Red Hat.
No, he's Arch Linux.
He's Arch Linux.
Yeah, Judd Vinay. We talked to him a couple weeks ago, actually.
Cool. And he's in Vancouver.
Yeah. Actually, Victoria.
Oh, of course. Victoria's full of all those. That's where Electronic Arts started.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy was in Burnaby.
They're the evil game empire now.
Now, yeah. I remember. It was really cool. The kid who created Evolution, 99 stages of... caveman game when he was still in high school. He got his own company. Now they're all bastards. Wait, I'm ranting against corporate America again. While at the same time telling everyone to buy my chill pack. Oh, the conundrum.
You hypocrite.
Exactly. Somebody save me from my own hypocrisy.
But the chill pack is cool, pun intended, right?
Yeah. Wow. Can I use that as a call-out on my website?
Absolutely. And you can also tell them on your website that the Chill Pack is fully Textio-endorsed because we would not want anybody to burn their penis on their laptop.
If the Textio does anything for America.
Order clitoris. Let's not forget women.
Yeah, order clitoris. That's right.
See, no to sterilization. Oh.
I don't think I'll ever see that lawsuit actually come up. I think women have a little more sensibility than that. Tell you the truth.
And they have small clitorises, too.
This conversation
is going to be creepy again. We were talking nicely, and all of a sudden we got to this creepy edge that it's so uncomfortable. I got to open a window or something.
What if you're a hermaphrodite? So you get both burnt.
I'll call Jamie Lee Curtis. and see what she says.
Oh, shit.
Oh, man. Ah, that's going to come back and bite me in the ass. I know.
You know, I don't think you have anything to worry about on that end.
I can't imagine Jamie Lee Curtis listening to the tech show anyway, so he's probably
a husband might.
Yeah, exactly. It might be somebody.
Did you ever work with her?
Oh, well. No, I haven't.
You probably won't now either.
No. Man, I might get a call. You never know. An email. I'll readily apologize.
You're not going to be in Spinal Tap 2.
Damn. No, I'm not. Oh, well.
Are you a big comic book fan? I mean, you've written one, but are you...
Yeah, no, no. I'm a huge comic book fan. I've written for DC Comics, actually, a couple times. I'm in Bizarro World 2, number 2, I think.
Okay.
I did a Batman parody. And, I was really... Mad Magazine was where I started. And that's how I learned to draw, copying Mad Magazine. Mort Drucker and Jack Davis and all those guys. And then got into the DC world and particularly, you know, alternative press, Kitchen Sink and Fantagraphics and all those guys.
You still collect or you still read?
I still read. Collecting has eaten up so much real estate that I'm actually going to start selling off my collection in the next few months. So anybody who's interested in... late 60s, early 70s, underground press, and rare things that I have, you'll be looking at eBay with everyone else, I guess.
How could you part with those
so
treasures?
That's not going up on the garage sale portion of your website then, huh?
Oh, it might. I might link the two. That would be smart, wouldn't it?
There you go.
How can I part
you
with...
You know, I was on your website, and I was looking for some official Dean Haglund garage sale items, and there just wasn't any to be found.
I sold a ton of it, and let's see, how do I put this politely? There is an entire collection on the web that you need a secret address to get to that is some very rare X-Files memorabilia that...
Ooh!
Yeah. That, you know, perhaps an email straight to me would get you to that area once you... I knew you were not with Fox Legal Department. Did that come across very cryptically?
Yeah.
Not really.
It did indeed.
But yeah, that's in the Dean garage sale. Basically, if you meet me at the conventions, I have that information. So yeah, there's some really cool stuff that's out there that's not visible to everyone.
I have one more question for you, Dean. Have you ever gone to the DEF CON convention in Las Vegas?
No, you know, and I've been invited 3 times, and the one time that I said I was going and then I had to cancel, suddenly my credit card was fraudulently copied 6 times, miraculously. Thanks, guys. That's a funny joke. And I actually contacted them again recently to talk about going out there and doing stand-up and seeing the guys, so... So, yeah, I would love to go. And
if you do go,
what's that?
Don't. If you do make it out to DEF CON, do not bring a Windows laptop.
Ah.
You will regret it.
Why, am I mocked out of there?
They will own you.
Really?
Yeah.
They have to stay in a Linux situation?
Oh, Linux, Apple, maybe. I don't know.
Don't bring any technology. Go naked.
Yeah,
that's what I was thinking. I'd even leave my BlackBerry behind, for crying out loud.
But don't use the Mac machines either.
They have a big monitor at the front of the convention hall, and what they show is different people's machines getting hacked.
Really?
In real time.
Oh,
like
well, then I am going. It's July, isn't it?
I think it's in the summertime, yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I might make it up this year. Whether or not I'm performing, I don't know, but definitely want to see it one of these years.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you want to come out to the Linux World Expo, we're going to have a booth there, and we would happily give you a free pass.
Oh, really? You guys got that kind of
we would.
Wow.
Yeah, we have
When's the Linux Expo?
It's in April.
In April, right when I'm in Israel.
No, it's before you go in Israel.
It's just a hop, skip, and a jump away, right? Israel to Boston?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it should be too hard. Well, thanks for the invite, gentlemen.
More than welcome. You're always welcome.
Thank you so much. And thanks for having me on the show, too. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for coming on.
We really appreciate it.
It's great having you on the show, Dean. And we really hope that we can get a hold of you again sometime and have you fill us in on how your Chilpak sales are going. Give us some more great stories.
Absolutely. I'm sure I'll have a ton of great stories traveling around the world this year, and be happy to share them with you next time.
Is Stage Kiss taken off, or is that still in?
I think they're still in post-production on that one, as far as I know. I haven't talked to those guys in 8 months, so the last thing they said is, we're still editing.
So it's been shot and everything, it's just...
Yeah, it's just they're getting all the scenes together and stuff, as far as I know.
Good luck with that.
I'll put that on my website, too, when it's coming out.
Oh, that's good.
Cool, man.
Thank you very much.
Outstanding.
Thank you, you guys. And
take
I'll
care.
Talk to you soon. You bet.
Yeah, take it
bye
easy.
Now.
Thanks, Dean.
Bye.
Thanks, man.
Bye.
Bye.
Ba-ba-ba.
So now with Dean.
Da-da-da. That was an hour.
Dean Haglund.
Yep.
Yep.
Good stuff.
And
so, Dan, are we gonna edit out the pregnant pauses? Through one or two?
If I go back and do that.
You want me to do it?
That means I'd have to send it to you, and then you'd have to send it back.
I mean,
there's not that many pauses.
There's only a couple. There's a couple.
I should just play the damn thing.
But then that would upset Judlin, who loves every dead air filled moment.
That's right. Just play it, man.
All right. What the hell? Leave it.
Oh, so we got... Well, that's it. I can go be with my family now.
Yep. Yep, and hopefully everything recorded all right. Sounds good.
Maybe hopefully. I should stop the recording now. Hold on.
Maybe.
Yeah, the mic.
Well, that was the interview with Dean.
Good interview, man.
Yeah.
How about that?
He was a good interview, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Cool guy, man.
You know what? I screwed up and played the wrong one. That was the full one. I did some post-production and trimmed off the beginning, but what the hell? Doesn't matter.
What's the big deal?
Yeah. Who would have known? So the AUG will be, well, the actual podcast will be a little different. Oh, here comes the
something,
static.
Something. There's Alan. You know it's Alan, right?
Yep.
You guys are just going to have to deal with it.
His laissez-faire attitude.
Hey, the laissez-faire attitude is freaking the Apple with their sound cards, man. That's where the attitude is.
Actually, it's probably not the sound card. This is using an external one. I didn't have the problem before, so I don't know what it is. Actually, let me flip.
What happened?
That sounds worse.
Okay. Well, no, I switched it over. It uses the...
You switched it over to full static.
Yes, I switched it over to full static. No, it's one of those Griffith external cards. And it also does line in as well as just microphone inputs. But,
uh-huh.
You know, in the fabulous way that they marked it, it's backwards. So I wanted to make sure I had it in the switch over in the right position. Obviously, I did.
So you're using what? Is it a USB mic that you're using over there, Alan?
It's a USB sound card. I use a USB sound card on it.
Okay.
It hangs off of there, and it has a line in and a speaker out jack.
Gotcha. And what about you, Pat? Are you using that Logitech headset thing?
Yeah. Yep.
See, now, I wanted to get... Well, how much did you pay for that?
Like $35.
That's a USB one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's USB.
I wanted to get one of those, and I keep looking at them. The cheapest one I found was one in Radio Shack for like 40, I think.
I got mine from CompUSA by my office in Jersey.
All right. I think that's an idea, especially since I appear to be having, you know, problems with my microphone, which I'm assuming sounds a little bit better now, guys, since I turned the gain down a little bit.
Yes, you do sound much better.
Doesn't clip as much, and I didn't realize it was clipping that horribly yesterday either. So, because to me, you know, on my end, it sounds fine.
Well, I may have to try one of the same type of microphone that Pat's using, and bypass the USB sound card here and see what happens then. Maybe it'll work better. Maybe it won't. Who knows?
Yeah.
I got an important issue we should bring up.
Let's hear it.
Shoot.
Posting a link in the chat now. The issue of...
Can we trust your links now?
No, this is a legitimate link.
Right.
Removing the new net neutrality and creating a tiered bandwidth, allocating a specific amount of bandwidth to broadband subscribers, carriers, content producers. The phone companies are looking to divvy out or portion out the internet bandwidth to the highest bidders to provide preferential treatment. Did you guys read that article? Bouncing
Not
off
yet.
Of Alexer. And the link I posted there has links to other sites that really talk about this, that they're really trying to push bills through Congress and everything so that it will allow the telcos the capability of providing preferential treatment to content providers, broadband carriers, whatever, to give them a greater amount of bandwidth on the internet. Right now, everybody, equal amount, you know, content going across shares with everybody else, but they're
right.
Trying to make it so that those who pay a little more will get a little bigger piece of the pie of that bandwidth.
Sure, they'll get better service.
So
that's the way of the world.
Well, it's not just necessarily, you know, individual consumer service. For instance, if MSN streaming, or Comcast actually, started streaming video or video on demand, they could portion out, they could secure a significant portion of the bandwidth and make it so that, you know, let's say that they'd have 25% of the pipe and everybody else would have 75%, but they'd be guaranteed 25% and everybody else would share the rest of that 75%, whereas right now everybody's sharing 100%, but they would be guaranteed
right.
that 25%. So, you know, the more people you have with preferential treatment paying for a significant portion of the bandwidth, the less shared bandwidth that everybody else gets, which can affect, you know, all the other services. For people that can't pay that amount to secure bandwidth for their services, for instance, like our show, we would never be able to pay extra money to secure or prioritize more bandwidth to stream the show. So we'd end up, you
right.
know, sharing that neutral whatever percentage would be left over, and that really sucks.
Sure, absolutely.
So, and I don't know what general users like us could actually do about that, except writing to congressmen. I don't know if it's over on the EFF yet, but, you know, definitely read those articles, check it out, because what Tom... Adelstein had posted was, you know, the name of his commentary is, "We're so close to losing the internet right now, hello." And, you know, his concern is this is going in under the wire. Not a lot of people are really concerned or seem to care about that, but it really sucks.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. But by the same token, I doubt that we'll ever lose the internet. And anything that anybody does at this point in time to take the internet as it is away from you know the geekier portion of the users is not going to work anyway.
Well, like I said, they're not taking
because
it away.
At this
so
point in
say.
Time, well, yeah, I know, but my whole point is at this point in time, the internet is not just a U.S. phenomenon anymore. It's a worldwide phenomenon, and the U.S. cannot meter it and control it like they think they can. And if they think they can and try and put that in the, trying to put some kind of a meter on that, what they're going to find out is that we geeks around the world will, you know, take just to the situation and fix it to our advantage one way or another.
It's unfortunate. How are the geeks around the world going to control the telcos, which is where we get, you know, majority of the providers of the internet, telcos and the cable systems, you know, parsing out and saying, you know, when it comes through our pipes, you know, we're going to provide preferential treatment to this content as opposed to, you know, this content. Or, you know,
sure, but it, the way that you meter bandwidth is by controlling protocols and things like that too, and you know what we'll do is we'll just develop different ones that are hard to control.
Well, the, you know,
that are harder for them to monitor and things like that.
Right, but if you take certain protocols for, you know, streaming audio or streaming video, and give that preferential to all other protocols, then you got a problem.
Until you wrap that into a, you know, until you wrap another service into that protocol. You know what I mean? Trust me, they're trying to. We've tried to do this at work a lot. Is you know, meter the bandwidth to different things and different protocols and different ports and things like that. And you know what happens is we always find something that supersedes what we're really trying to do. It's a very difficult thing to do. I mean, it's real easy for the telcos to say, oh, well, we're gonna, you know, we're gonna get over on this so that we can make a little bit more money, which is what they're trying to do because they're losing, you know what I mean, the telcos themselves are losing big money off the internet, or they think they are. So they're trying to control it a little bit more, but they're never really going to get the control they want without, one, pissing people off, and two, people are just going to, you know, find another way to get around. Same thing with, you know, all the other stuff they're trying to push a lot of false control on, like DRM issues and all. It's a bad thing, and I think everybody should, you know, write their congressman and tell them about it in the United States. The reality is I don't think that the Congress gives a shit anymore about the people in the country. And,
yeah, I have to agree.
One way or the other, we're going to have to take things in our own hands and fix it. So.
Oh, Link's inciting a riot. A militia.
Yep.
All right.
I'm inciting an electronic militia. Hackers unite, right?
Yeah, definitely read those articles. They're pretty interesting. Pretty interesting stuff. Pat, you still there? How about the...
I'm still here.
How about Arch, huh? How about the update to X-Org 7?
I'm futzing with it now.
What?
And I'm not getting going.
I am...
It looks like it creates a new X-Org configuration file in the root directory.
Oh, it did? I didn't notice that.
That's pretty bizarre.
I'm on X-Org 7. I did all the updates. I'm up to the latest. And the only issues I had was the conflict between Mesa, libgldri, and the NVIDIA drivers. But, you know, just removing the libgldri and installing, removing Mesa, and then, actually, I think I reinstalled it and then installed the NVIDIA stuff. You can't do that with X-Org running. That worked out pretty fine for me. I did have initial issues with XFCE being linked to ICE auth, which was in the old X11R6 bin directory.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard-coded in XFCE. I created a symlink to where it's now in the USR bin, and now the new XFCE version rectifies that problem. But, you know, today I went up to the latest and everything, and so far so good. Although I couldn't really do it remotely. I had a problem because I was sitting at work over my lunch hour. I just ran the update, and the problem I had is you have to actually close out of X before you can install the NVIDIA drivers.
Yeah, I'm just doing this on my laptop. I don't even have NVIDIA. So it looked like it generated this bizarro X file, so I'm just going to reconfigure X to have a utility XOR config. That'll do it.
Uh huh.
So I'm gonna do that.
Yeah, some of the paths change. I kept my original XOR, and I had to change paths in there because everything now is the XOR 7 is modular. See, there's some extra files that you got to make sure you have, and some paths change for fonts and the mm-hmm. default module path change.
Saw that.
Yeah, but so far so good. I mean, it wasn't as smooth as all the other stuff I've ever done in Arch, and I think that's because they're going through a little bit of growing pains with it. And I suspect in a couple weeks it'll be all ironed out and just as easy as everything else was in the past. If it takes that long.
Yeah. I wonder if, can you generate an X file with HWD space dash X? That's how I did it originally, and that worked out pretty well.
That's a good question. I never tried it. I just
let me try it right now.
There you
Here's
go.
A question for you guys, though. If Arch is supposed to be so damn great, how come every time you guys do an upgrade, you're telling everybody that everything gets hosed on your system? Don't they test this shit before they let it out and release, or what?
Yeah, well, they do, and it's a little more... It's not as bleeding edge as I think Debian Unstable, but, you know, with some... It's just been some hiccups, and they're not insurmountable. I mean, they're really easy to fix.
Because, like, as a general thing, when I do my upgrades on Slackware, that usually fixes problems. It doesn't create new ones. You know what I mean?
No, I understand exactly what you're saying, and you're right there. It is a little frustrating, but like I said, the problems that occur are really easy to fix. But and again, you know, they shouldn't be occurring, and maybe that's because of, how Arch is designed and how bleeding edge it gets close to. And
I mean, I really want to try Arch and everything like that. But like every time I get ready to do something, I hear one of you guys talking about how repository is broken or another piece of software is busted.
The repositories aren't broken. The repositories aren't broken with Arch. It seems that it's bleeding edge, so they bring, you know, the latest and greatest in there. Like, Xorg 7 is a big jump. It's using a modular configuration now. It's pretty different from what it has been lately.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I hope that, and as the future goes on with Arch, that kind of those issues like that you have with the jump from Xorg aren't going to be as problematic. Because, you know, I thought the same thing you were just saying, Link. It's like, why didn't anybody test this? Why am I having conflicts with Mesa, NVIDIA, and DRIGL? And why is one required by the other? And why do I have to force remove something and ignore the dependencies in order to get another thing to work properly? And like I said, I suspect that that's going to be ironed out very shortly. But, again, it should have been ironed out in testing.
It should indeed, and you know, maybe it's just because we're spoiled from running Slackware for so long where, you know, things are very vanilla and they're tested out and everything runs
just
when you
work.
Get it. It's stable, you know what I mean? That's the plus for Slackware. It's a real rock solid stable kind of thing.
And Pat, I don't know if you have a little more knowledge of the Arch distribution than I do, because I didn't really do a lot of research, but my understanding, or I'm getting the feeling that 7.2, and I'm looking at the progress, they're about 84% on the way to 7.2, and that my suspicion is if you just keep updating your Arch system, just running the mm-hmm. fresh and package and updating, by the time they come out with 7.2, you're going to be running it.
Pretty much, yeah. It's a rolling upgrade.
Yeah, that's what I think, because it seems like stuff comes out of testing and drops right into the current version, and when 7.2 comes out, those people that have just been, you know, running update periodically, like you'd run apt-get upgrade, you're going to be running 7.2.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, that's what it seems to me. And, you know, maybe there's some limitations with that model right there is what we're seeing. But again, like I said, the problems haven't been insurmountable, and they've been easy fixes.
So I'm just going through the how-to, and I'm sure I'll get it working soon.
But as always, check out the forums.
Yep.
Good stuff.
I got some. I posted on our sticky page regarding the Linux World Expo. I got a 100 free passes for the expo floor. So if you guys want them, if you go on the bulletin board, I have my address. Send me a self-addressed stamped envelope, and I'll send you a pass. If you're too lazy to register on the Linux World Expo registration page.
Right, and again, that pass gets you into just the expo and the, was it, Birds of a Feather conferences, right?
Yeah, the main floor.
For free.
Plus the conference keynotes in the morning.
That's it, yeah.
Any last words? I'm going to close up. Noel?
Nope.
No words. Good night, everybody.
Nope. Who's our guest for next week?
We got Zach Russin from KDE. He's their XGL guy, so we could find out what KDE is doing in terms of XGL. I know the GNOME people are doing quite a bit, so it'll be interesting to find out what the KDE people are doing.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to have to cut out of here. So I want to thank everybody for listening.
Yes, indeed. Thanks for listening, everybody. Good night. Catch us again next week for 125, right?
Yep.
This was 124, so next week will be 125.
All right. Peace out, everybody. I'm playing the music.
Night.
Have a good one. Good night.
Good night.
Are you making egg foo young in the kitchen? I was in a dining room having sushi. Shut up. Just shut up.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. You know I'm gonna tap that ass, right? It's over.